please step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 391. I am Lisa Sheps, along with my co-host, Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
That's Nicole Shiro and Nick Mayo. You're listening to us on KOP, Hornsby Austin 91.7 FM, streaming live on this winter's day at koop.org. Do not go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
Some other girl guy.
It is Wednesday, December 21st. It is the winter solstice. On the show today. What it is.
The solstice.
On the show today, we are joined later on the show by Nick Westrate, star of Broadway, off-Broadway, and television and movies. And of course, we're going to have a lively discussion about the news, the views, and the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, and El Paso. Don't go away. Did you go away?
I didn't.
Don't go away. I said
I'm
not
here.
To.
I'm right here.
That's Nick Mayo. Checking in with Nick Squared. How are you guys?
We're good.
Okay, thanks for coming on the show.
Goodbye.
So we have another day today where we get to chit and chat for a while.
I like that.
So first of all, what a great International Folk Bazaar.
You know what? I really love that show and that kid.
And you know what? USA is an international place. And so the Donald Duck singing Wish You a Merry Christmas or whatever it was singing.
It's international.
Donald is international.
He's international.
He's not only across the pond, he's in the pond.
He is the pond.
Get it? He's a duck.
It's true. Unless you drain the swamp.
A duck that doesn't wear pants.
Here's a question.
What?
How do you get down off an elephant?
How?
You don't get down off an elephant. You get down off a duck. Okay, grandfather humor right here. So International Folk Bazaar was Taj sitting in for Fado Doe doing what's the Frank Zappa tribute? Hour of Frank Zappa. How much fun is that?
Taj rocks too.
I love this radio station.
Let me tell you something. Not only do I love this radio station, but this Wednesday in particular, is a spectacular day.
This Wednesday is a spectacular day.
We're just going to keep it going.
Yep.
And be as cool as
I'm really excited for our guest. We'll tease it up a little bit. So, Nick Westrate is a New York performer, off-Broadway performer, Broadway, and we're gonna spend a full half hour chatting with him.
Yeah,
he's got some stuff to tell us about.
He's got some stuff to tell us about.
He does.
Okay, so let's just start with how many days of Christmas are there?
Four
more days?
Yeah.
What is it? Four ladies perming?
Well, I don't know which count.
No, how many days total are there?
12.
Oh, 12.
12 days to Christmas, 12 days to Christmas. Plenty of time to do my Christmas shopping. Here the people with shopping time, plenty of time. Here the people with time to spare who shop at our convenience. 12 days to Christmas, 12 days to Christmas. Look at the way we do our Christmas shopping.
Excellent. So that's 12 days.
I don't know if anyone happens to know that that's something that Nick Squared share is their love for the musical She Loves Me.
It's great. Well, and speaking of She Loves Me.
He's in love with it like I am.
Well, of course, it's a wonderful show. Here's the deal with She Loves Me. If you remember, there was a Broadway HD did a live stream experiment of She Loves Me.
Yes.
Which worked moderately well. It had some issues, but it was still very good. I watched it.
Then they rebroadcast it in the theater.
And evidently it was recut, so it was a little bit better put together. But you know what? On January 14th...
What day is that?
What?
January 14th? Broadway HD is doing Holiday Inn.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, that's exciting.
I love that. I just want
come to the Holiday Inn.
I just want to throw this random little tidbit.
Yes.
Our guest later on in the show, Nick Westrait, and I did a production of She Loves Me in high school together.
Oh, lovely. What did each of you play?
I played Stephen Kodai, and Nick played Shopper number four.
I was customer number four.
But he was also like killer in the cafe scene. It's killer comedy.
Killer in the cafe scene.
I was looking for the Mona Lisa cream.
Oh, you were?
Yes, that was me.
Oh, amazing. Yes. I bet you're good at that.
I would like to do it, but I didn't. I can't sing, so there it is. So I want to go back and carry on some of the conversations we were having before about my trip to New York and the shows I saw, but I want to talk about White Rabbit, Red Rabbit again, because I was purposely very quiet about what the, and I'm going to use air quotes,
the story is,
because it's got a sort of a loose narrative. But there was an interesting article that came out, I think it was in Playbill, where it talked about some of the things that happened in the audience. And I want to share some of those with you. So suffice it to say that there's a single actor that comes on stage, and this actor is handed a script and a white vial of powder.
Ooh.
And the first thing that happens is he's instructed to put that, or maybe somebody from the audience, I forgot, comes back and puts the white vial of powder in one of two glasses. And so it's clearly it's poison of some sort. And he's got to drink one of those glasses at some point during the show. And I know, it's crazy. And this is written by a gentleman named Nasin Soleimanpour, who is in Iran, and he gives his email address lots of times during the show, so you can email him and talk to him and things like that. Some of the people that have been in it, Nathan Lane, Darren Criss, Raymond Karamlu, that's a hard one to
it's
say,
a
too.
Hard one. It's, hard
it's
one.
Almost as hard to say as... I'm not kidding. And Cynthia Nixon. So here's some of the things that happened, and it spoils a little bit of it. When F. Murray Abraham was doing it, one of the audience members, apparently determined to save the life of the Oscar winner's, life, this audience member ran up on stage, grabbed the two glasses of water from the set, and dumped them onto the stage floor before Abraham could drink them.
She then
ran up the aisle and out of the theater.
Love her.
It's great.
Do you think she saw the show before, so she planned that?
She's just a diehard.
She may have seen it before and knew, and she may have planned it. During Darren Criss's thing, a female audience member came on, and Darren Criss pulled her on stage, and she was escorted up the aisle, and Darren touched her, and she fainted.
Hysterical.
Really?
Yeah. People like him.
He touched me. I had a different response.
Let's see. I didn't hear it, so...
Sorry.
Let's see. Post-election, Alex Brightman. So Alex Brightman's performance, the first to follow the election, the communal experience in the theater was stronger than ever and elicited quite a few vocal references to Donald Trump from the audience members. One particular audience member, when asked the date, said she didn't know since the election had her all something upped. Brightman joked, "You're most certainly the only one who feels that way." They said, "We all rabbits are together." Let's see. So there were other things that happened, but it was very interesting. So one of the things, the very, very first thing that happens, I think even before the powder is poured, is we count off. All the audience members are counted off. So all the way through. So in my audience, there were 200 and some odd people there. We all counted off one by one, and then he calls up people by number.
What
number five, come
you?
Out. I was number 150.
Ooh, that's kind of right in the middle.
Yeah, it's kind of right in the middle.
You know what, Lisa? there's only one person who can't do an interview on the show, and that's Barbara Walters.
Go on.
Why?
Say the name. Sorry, that was mean-spirited. White Rabbit, Red Rabbit.
White Rabbit. Oh, can't do it this one. Yes. White Rabbit. Poor Baba Wawas.
White Rabbit, Red Rabbit.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. We're on fire in here today.
One last thing. Billy Porter was brought to tears at the end of the show because the one of the lines in it says they talk about this playwright is basically killing somebody by forcing them to drink poison, but he's not going to get tried or anything, because he specifically mentions we never put the inventor of the gun on trial. It's a really sort of it's beautiful. Anyway, that's fun. So much for that.
Rip it up!
Rip it up! That's basically it. That's all I wanted. Shakespeare in the Sky. You put this in there,
did
Nicole.
Did you read the article?
I read the article.
What did you think about?
Yeah, you know what? It's okay. I mean, it depends on what they choose. So why don't you tell people what we're talking about?
So I didn't print the article, so I forgot the name of the airline, but there's a Canadian airline.
I bet you it's Canada Air.
No, I don't think it is Canada
Air. It's Canadia Air. It's Air Canada.
It's a boot air.
But I'm sure if you Google Shakespeare in the Sky, it'll come up. I know we can have the
Or you could just go to offstageonair.com and press the link.
And then it links right to where it is. See? But they're going to be doing, for flights over 5 hours, they're going to be doing Shakespeare performances of Shakespeare in the Sky.
That's hysterical.
Yeah, so you're going to get like... True, they're going to be taking some from their
Shakespeare
company.
They didn't say what
they
were doing.
They didn't say what they were doing, what the content were, but they're professional actors from some of the Shakespeare companies. I think they're trying to work with London, too.
Well, but I got the sense it was on video. You're getting a sense it's live?
I thought some of it was live, but
I caught it was video. I would not like that, because I don't want to be forced to watch.
Either way.
They're like, we've got these people that can't leave. Let's show them to Shakespeare.
I never thought about it like that. I don't know, but I kind of love it. I would watch it on the TV, too. I watched Downton Abbey. I did. I had 24 hours. I was going to Asia, and I was like, what is this Downton Abbey everyone speaks of?
That's
loved it.
And I watched the first series. I was about 2 seasons behind. I watched the whole series on the way over, and I'm like, this is great. I'll catch up on season 2 on the way home. And it was phenomenal.
There you go. Hey, what was that show that's the song Be Italian is from?
Nine.
9 days to Christmas, 9 days to Christmas. Still enough time to do your Christmas shopping. These are the people who shop in time. Shop in time. Still enough time. Sensible people who organize the time at their disposal. 9 days to Christmas, 9 days to Christmas. Still enough time to do your Christmas shopping.
Yep, they went there. Okay, that's 9 days.
Love it.
Are you seeing a theme here?
No.
So exciting.
Who here, raise your hand if you've seen La La Land.
You went, and she sent me a text that she's there. I'm like, wait a minute, didn't I send an email that we should all go? She went.
Yeah,
all
I don't
by
go to movies with people. I go.
That is not true. We went to Les Miserables.
I rarely go to movies with people.
Uh-huh. I haven't seen it, and I would love to know what you think about.
Well, okay, so as a movie as a whole, I enjoyed it. It starred Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. And you know, neither are singers or dancers, really.
Mm-hmm. Emma Stone did do she did cabaret, so right. She's got some stage experience.
And they both sang and danced. But the thing that sort of upset me is they had to sort of, I'll use air quotes again, dumb down the singing and dancing to hit so that they wouldn't look bad. And they did, they looked good. It was a charming movie. Lots of fun. Totally recommend it. And I cried at the end, as I always do. Sometimes I cry at car commercials. It doesn't even have to be a Hallmark
commercial.
Don't give
me Folgers
at the
holidays. I get
some commercials, yeah. Oh,
when they're going, best part of waking up, tears. Come on.
Yeah.
Someone's always coming home.
So
it starts, they let you know it's coming earlier with the... You're like, no!
Okay. So, yeah. And you know what's not, doesn't happen in movies?
What?
Commercials.
They showed you some. Did they give you previews of other musicals beforehand?
At Alamo Drafthouse, there's lots of things. So I sort of want to segue into that. And we heard, by the way, one of the more fun numbers from that show at the very top of the show called Lovely Night. That was indeed Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone singing, I assume.
I thought it was pretty.
Yeah, it's pretty. And it's fun. That was like, they don't like each other that night. So it just sort of made me think about movie musicals and what we have now with regards to movie musicals and what was, because I watched Holiday Inn, not Holiday Inn, White Christmas, which is love.
I love that.
And the
Sisters.
Caliber of performance, musical performance, singing and dancing.
The bar is so high.
But we don't do that now. But then I also, and I'd never heard of this. Maybe you guys have. Have you heard of Walking on Sunshine?
No.
Walking on Sunshine, yeah. The Katrina and the Wave song. Yes. There's a movie called Walking on Sunshine.
Was it Julie Taymor?
No.
No, that's it? Across God, the
no.
universe.
No. Okay, there's some. Yeah, that's who did this? I do know about
nobody,
this.
Nobody that I knew. I did not know any of their names. But it was. It's out of Great Britain, and it's a musical with all 80s numbers. And it looked quite fun.
Here's what I think. Here's my little holiday two cents on movie musicals.
Yep.
I think that as time has gone by, we've gotten afraid of theatricality in our movie musicals. Mm-hmm. If you watch something like The Gang's All Here, the Carmen Miranda movie, or all these, The White Christmas, there's so many fantastic movie musicals. But the reason why we love them is because the theatrical element.
Right.
You have these people who are performing on sound stages, and they're filling a sound stage, and we're watching it through a tinier lens. I feel like we've made our movie musicals a little too small. And a little too...
We're making them more real. And this was my complaint about when Rent, the movie Rent, came out.
I completely agree.
Yeah. It took all the opening number was very theatrical. And I went, oh, this is going to be good. But then they went completely real after that. And it was not good.
But people mistake stakes. Like, the stakes are really high in Rent. The stakes are really high in all these things. And so when you bring the performance level down, so do the stakes, and therefore our care for those characters.
I will say, Bette Midler's movie version of Gypsy was pretty darn good.
No, you're preaching to the choir.
So that one, I think they did, because they did it like an old
school
with the
set. Yeah, but girl, that was 20 years ago.
I know, it's still good.
All right, never saw it.
We'll have to put it on during the feast or something.
I'm all for it.
Yeah.
But anyway, movie musicals, I'd like to see them come back. I'd like to see them take something like La La Land, which had a lot of the elements of a musical where, you know, the music carries the story and it breaks out of reality. The opening number was really fun. It's like everybody and it's in the trailer, I think, everybody's get in the traffic jam in LA and they're out of their cars dancing on the cars. It was really wonderful.
I would like to see more of that too. And I would like for the emphasis to be put on the theatricality and high stakes in the performers, not so much in the production elements. Where I think that we steal from the performers. Let the performers do the work.
But the problem is the people that have the chops to do that don't have the name appeal to make it work on a wide audience.
I agree with that.
So, I mean, you get...
Something's got to give, though.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that's the same problem that the networks are having with these live shows.
Oh, totally.
They're putting Carrie Underwood instead of...
Julie Andrews or exactly. Mary Martin. I completely agree.
So back to my trip, but it's not really my trip. There was an article about the Grobes, Josh Groban.
I just have to let you know, I told Casey about, you turned around and go, I was a fan of the Grobes. You're not a full fan of the Grobes, but this show and the performance of the Grobes, you're like, I like the Grobes.
I appreciate what he did.
The show, I appreciated the Grobes.
He showed some different, he showed his stuff.
Well, that made Casey's day. We had a conversation about you and the Grobes yesterday.
Well, there's an article in the Times. You can click to it on offstageonair.com where it talks about his process to get to this.
Because he's the Grobes. Of course there's a process. Because
the unkempt ne'er-do-well that is...
Does it say, like, I don't bathe and I grow my hair out and my beard out? What when they talk about the process, what is that?
He spent a lot of time trying to get the gruff in his voice, trying to learn how to act. He really hasn't acted.
Uh-huh.
He dropped out.
He was in Fiddler in high school.
He was in Fiddler in high school, and he dropped out of Carnegie Mellon as a freshman to start recording. So he really didn't, he's not trained. So a couple of things happened. I mean, he had a team. So this Broadway team worked with him for 6 months, followed him on the road, went with him on the road. The choreographer, the music director, and the director would come out on the road and work with him on different aspects. And so he had a lot of... The money getting him there had to be a lot.
Man.
They spent a lot of money getting him there.
But you know what I say to this? And I felt the same way when...
He didn't want to just get on stage, though. He wanted to work on his craft. I'm totally cool with it.
I felt the same thing when Dan Radcliffe had a team around him teaching him to dance. That showed me Dan wants to learn this skill to then be able to to perform in this medium, and I respect that.
So and he showed he has the chops.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm not poo-pooing it.
I love it.
I just I would like to have that team to work on me.
Oh, absolutely.
So I won't read the whole article. Well, yes, I will.
Wait a minute. I'm going to call the Grobes and ask if he can recommend or share the team.
That'd be great.
I'm getting it.
The headings on this, it had different headings about what he was doing. So a new instrument was his talk about how he learned how to play the accordion for this. Getting into character and learning how to act, roughing things up. Trying to learn how to be scruffy.
Yeah, he's a little rainbows and unicorns. I can see that.
Finding his
being
feet,
different.
Learning how to dance a little bit.
So basically, the stuff that a lot of people do in a college or conservatory program,
correct.
He did a concentrated version of that. Good for him.
Correct.
It's very rocky of him.
Oh, Nicole, you're killing me.
It is rocky. Speaking of golf, when you hit a golf ball and it like is about to hit somebody, what do you say?
Four!
Love
okay,
it.
Just so you know, your mics were hot at that point.
Oh.
They've been hot every time, so we're hearing you struggling with lyrics.
Shh, dang.
I wish the video was going, because we literally have been dancing and bebopping and crazy. And
we're having fun, though.
It's International Folk Bazaar.
I did not click on this, but what is Peter Pan Goes Wrong on TV?
Oh my gosh, I did print this out because I got all excited. So remember when we were talking about that show over in England last year about the Peter Pan gone wrong, about the play that goes wrong, and it's like a kind of like a
Are you talking about the This American Life thing about fiascos in the Peter Pan production?
No, there was the play called The Play That Goes Wrong.
And, oh, right. Yes.
And
it's
was
like
actually
a Noise Is Off.
Like a Noise Is Off, but it was based on a theater production doing a production of Peter Pan, so it was backstage everything that goes wrong. Well, they now turned it and changed the name and called it The Peter Pan Goes Wrong, and it's playing at the Apollo over in London, but they rebuilt. They're going to televise it in England, and they rebuilt, talking about old school stages and doing it the proper way, they rebuilt everything to create the exact set into the soundstage. And are doing
cool.
it exactly like
that.
And doing, and you and I were laughing so hard at some of the antics of this, and they said it took them a long time to do it right because they had to get the stunts and everything correct. But Peter Pan gone wrong? Come on. That's a good time.
It's good.
So I'm hoping that they're going to put it on that weekend. Get it? So the play that goes wrong is going to be in New York. They're moving the story February 2017. So
excellent. Does it have a theater?
It says no.
No.
Okay. I don't think so. It doesn't say in this article. I shouldn't say it doesn't have a theater. I'm reading an article from England. But it will be on BBC One on December 31st.
Yeah,
so maybe on one of our
one.
BBCs, we yeah, might get it. So 6:20 p.m. on December 31st on BBC One. I'm going to say that's Eastern Time.
And we, you can...
that's England time.
You can also click that link on offstageonair.com and find that whole article to talk about that. Amelie is coming to Broadway.
Mm-hmm. You've been excited about the Little Amelie.
Yeah, I am.
Musical, but it opened last night at the Amundsen in Los Angeles, starring one Philippa Sue.
Mm-hmm.
Not a fun name to say.
It is.
Philippa Sue?
It's almost fun as David
How do
Oyelowo.
You do?
Oh,
I just did it. If you don't think
yeah,
it,
wait
you don't
a
think
minute.
About it, it just comes right out.
Let me tell you, I couldn't even have remembered it, so that was good.
So the article I read, the review I read in Variety was a little, it wasn't great.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad. They liked Philippa Sue a lot. But Amelie, I need to rewatch the movie. I saw it when it first came out. But it says, one of the things it says, because you love the musical, that all important ingredient, the close-up, is not there. To say nothing of the energy supplied by bold compositions, near constant camera movement, and dynamic cutting. So it loses a little bit, and you lose the close-up of that, what's her name? I forgot her name, who played her. Did such a great job in the movie.
Mm.
But this was developed by Berkeley Rep and playing in Los Angeles. It's going to come to New York in the spring, April, I think, right?
I've seen like two or three songs. They look pretty.
Yeah.
It looks,
I wish them well.
A little eye candy like.
There's a lot of work that can happen out of town. I hope that.
Craig Lucas wrote it, and he's known for films. And I did not realize he wrote Light in the Piazza.
He wrote the book to Light in the Piazza,
which is not one of my favorites.
Well, yeah. Let's.
I do like the play he wrote, Reckless.
Yes.
I like that play a lot. So we're gonna go into Today in Theater History.
Today in Theater History.
Right, because you know what, when you're at a football game,
you need to know Today
and you go
in Theater History.
You go, we're number
one. One day to Christmas, one day to Christmas, not a time to do a Christmas shopping.
There it is.
Well
so
done.
We play this song every year, bits and pieces. I've never done it quite this way before. It's been
no,
sort of
I
fun.
I kind of really like the this. Way you did this.
And this, I believe, is called Merry Christmas from She Loves Me.
12 Days to Christmas.
12 Days to Christmas. Okay, I kept calling it Merry Christmas. Anyway, so Today in Theater History, and then we're going to take a break, and we're going to talk to our guest, Nick Westrate, the third in our triad to make Nick Cubed.
Nick Cubed.
In 1889, Beatrice Cameron stars as Nora Hellman in the premiere of A Doll's House.
Oh. Yeah.
1889. I did not realize it was that
yeah,
old.
Yeah, I was just about to say the same thing.
Henrik Ibsen is old. Speaking of Ibsen, Anton Chekhov's Three Sisters opened its Broadway debut in 1942, starring Catherine Cornell, Judith Anderson, and Ruth Gordon.
Wow.
Interesting.
It also, the orderly is played by somebody named Kirk Douglas.
Hmm. Oh, wow. Hmm. Who just had a bon anniversaire.
Bon anniversaire. So 1950, Cole Porter tried to capitalize on the success of Kiss Me, Kate. He did a show called Out of This World. It's based on the Amphitryon legend. Who knows what that is?
Nope.
No clue.
Me neither.
I'm going to say it was a raging success, wasn't it, Lisa?
It got panned, but it played for 157 performances.
Oh, actually, that's not bad.
Nope. 1974, David Mamet opened American Buffalo in Chicago with Patricia Cox, Stephen Schachter, and W.H. Macy at the St. Nichols Theater. And I don't know that
where
theater.
Where is that?
I don't know. I meant to look it up, and I didn't.
It's got to have a name
change. 1974, so it must have been before I moved there. 1980, Crimes of the Heart opened. That's a Beth Henley show. Manhattan Theater Club. Mary Beth Hurt, Mia Dillon, and Peter McNichol, along with Julie Nesbitt. Mm. And there was a film version, which I don't think I ever saw.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Really? And
you still haven't seen Connie and Carla either, have you?
No.
Yeah, see.
Okay, birthdays. Jane Fonda.
Woo! Working
Woo!
Out!
Yes.
Josh Mostel.
Oh, hello.
1946. He's old. Harold Lang. And locally, Robert Dyke and Eric Graham.
Oh, well, hello.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
All right, so we're going to take a little break. We're going to finish off the 12 Days of Christmas song, go into a break, and then we're going to come back with our special guest. We'll be right back.
Merry Christmas!
We are back. You're listening to Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro and Nick Mayo. Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
We're off stage and on the air on KOOP Hornsby, Austin. We are very fortunate to have on the telephone, I'm assuming from New York City, stage, screen, big and little, off-Broadway, Broadway star, Mr. Nick Westrate. Hi, Nick. How are you?
Hi, guys. I'm great. How are you?
We're excellent. We're very good you're there. You know what? I'm going to put you to work right away. Can you give us a number between 2 and 54, please?
Any number?
Any number.
Okay. 14.
14. Okay, great. We'll see what that is in a second.
I wanted to... This is your best friend, Nick, talking to you on air. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Super well. We're happy to have you on offstage and on air.
We're thrilled to have you on.
Super excited.
Well, I wanted to give our listeners a little bit of background on Nick Westrate. Nick Westrate is an off-Broadway, Broadway actor, currently the star of AMC's Washington Turn, and also incredibly active in a grassroots movement called Fair Wage on Stage, which is I'll let Nick tell you a little bit more about. But just some of the things that our listeners might have seen Nick in include Casa Valentina on Broadway, Tribes off Broadway, A Delicate Ship off Broadway, Galileo, Love's Labor's Lost, The Little Foxes, The Boys in the Band, A Moon for the Misbegotten on Broadway. And Nick also received the Special Drama Desk Award for Outstanding contribution to off-Broadway theater, where he did 3 off-Broadway shows in one season.
Just 3? That's not a big deal.
Couldn't you get more in?
No, I mean, there. It was actually 4 that year, but I only won for the 3 because I was terrible in the 4th one.
It's probably good. It's probably good enough. So we're going to see what number you chose here right now, and then we're going to get on with this interview. Are you ready to see what your number brings? Here it is.
We're the Kathy Dunn-Herrick Dance Company. You're listening to KOOP Hornsby Austin, 91.7 FM.
Woohoo! That was like stereo.
That was not only like stereo, I think it was stereo.
Yeah!
So, Nick, we have been following you, and actually, coincidentally, Nick Mayo is on the show, but we followed... I guess it's really not over, but the Fair Wage on Stage campaign. And can you just tell folks a little bit about what that was, why it was, and give us a little nickel tour of what happened?
Absolutely. So the Fair Wage on Stage campaign is a grassroots movement about workers' rights. For many years in New York, we've had just terrible, very depressed wages for artists. And we decided, a few actors got together and decided to do something about that. And we decided the only way to, there's kind of this myth, right, of the starving artist, and that an actor should take any job they get because there are a million people in line behind you who will take it if you don't. And a group of us who work off Broadway a lot wanted to challenge that idea and say, if we got everyone who works off Broadway all the time to band together and lobbied our union and lobbied our employers, could we get better wages?
Right.
And so we did that through a video campaign on the internet. And it was very successful. It was very successful in kind of explaining that we are workers. We're highly trained workers. We work 42 to 64 hours a week. You know, stuff that people just don't think about with stage actors.
So, and how did the, I know that there were negotiations that took place last month. And so this was a really wonderful outpouring of the Broadway, off-Broadway, not only actors, but stage managers, designers, playwrights. Talk a little bit about the feeling of what it was to come together and actually unionize in that way. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was pretty extraordinary. There's something we found is that with the challenges, the economic challenges of being a working artist, being an actor or a stage manager in the theater, we kind of hide from each other because we all want to seem fabulous, right? We're in show business. We're successful. We're important.
We're too busy.
We're too busy. We put out that air, but it was incredible to hear the stories of some of your favorite actors, directors, stage managers talking about how tough it is. How financially difficult it is to survive as an artist in this country. And there's an incredible solidarity when you all kind of share your war stories with each other.
Absolutely.
Well, we talk about that here in Austin as well. We have a situation which is very much in line with what the off-Broadway performers and stage managers were dealing with, in that the smaller theaters here in town, you can't get away without paying your designers or the technicians or your musicians, but the one people you can get away without paying is actors. And they become this sort of disposable piece of your show, which you absolutely need, which is an indisposable piece.
That's the absurdity. And I think a lot of people, I mean, Nick, you can talk about this more, is that was a narrative in a lot of people's videos that they shared in the campaign.
It was. I mean, really, the only people you need to put on a play are the actors and the stage managers. I mean, we've been doing plays for tens of thousands of years without even writers. We even know how to make them up, you know? So we can do them anywhere, anytime. We're the actual, we are the essential element, and we're treated as the most disposable. It's really ironic. I was talking with an actor who's based in Minneapolis recently, And she said, it's so ironic that the closer you get to making the art, the less you get compensated for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm, true, mm-hmm. because in many ways people think that they are doing you a favor by giving you the opportunity to work on their stage.
Exactly. And what our campaign was about is the fact that opportunity and exposure, they actually don't accept those at the ATM or the grocery store.
Well, they do here, actually.
Yeah. Got to move down there.
Really should. So
no, I mean, you can't prey on the fact that people love what they do. And there is a problem, I think, in our culture at large, that people sometimes hate artists because we get to do what we love.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's not a healthy way to think about anything. I mean,
it's
I'm
also
sorry
not
if
fair.
People hate their job, but...
No, I know astrologists are excited to be astrologists, but no one's given them a hard time about it.
Exactly.
So Nick, I want to, if you could just give our listeners a little bit of idea. So you did go to the negotiating table with the Off-Broadway Theater League, and how did that work out? Talk about the negotiation side. So you talked a little bit about the campaign and the grassroots effort of everyone coming together. Talk about what happened when you guys actually sat down.
And I'm going to interrupt for a second before you do that, under the lens of, because on Off-Broadway has the unique combination of not only having Off-Broadway commercial ventures, but you also have a lot of nonprofits operating in an Off-Broadway environment.
Yes.
So how did that all play out in the negotiations as well?
Well, that's a very challenging part of the negotiation. I do have to say I was not at the negotiating table because I'm not an elected member of the union, nor am I a member of the Off-Broadway League.
I would vote for you.
Oh, well, thank you.
you got one vote.
So I can't really speak to what the negotiations were like in the room.
But the outcome.
But the union itself was really great in listening to us, in listening to all the research and all the passion and the campaign that we came with, and they really advocated for the higher wages. And I've always said that this is a problem. I mean, this problem happened in this country, in our city, and there are three parties at fault. The producers, the union, and then all of us, because we were all three parties asleep at the wheel. And so all we wanted was for everyone to come together in these negotiations and find a way that worked for these three disparate groups, right? There are these three groups within the Off-Broadway League as well, the not-for-profits with a budget larger than $6 million, not-for-profits with a budget under $6 million, and the commercial theaters, as you pointed out, Lisa. And they have really different interests. Mm-hmm. So we were able to structure an agreement that was different for these different groups.
Wonderful.
Within the overall. And that's really what cracked everything open in the end.
That's a big feat.
That's a huge feat.
There's path dependence a lot of times in the arts. We keep following the same path, and we don't know why we can't get the better result. And what we decided to do was kind of make a new path in order to get to the new result, which is kind of what we're finding as an organization we ultimately want to encourage other people to do in arts organizations.
What I'd like to call out and give you a little kudos for is, you know, oftentimes artists aren't given credit for being smart about the way they do things. And you started, I don't know where in the process, but I think it was towards the very, very beginning where y'all wrote a letter to the Off-Broadway producers and managers, which is a very thoughtful, articulate letter stating everybody's side. And it's basically stating that we all want to win. We're all on the same team, but we need to make a living.
Yes, yes. Thank you. And ththank you for reading that. We also hand-delivered those letters to each of the theaters. I mean, we really do want everyone to be on the same team, and in no way do we want to blame one party as being more at fault than any other party.
Right.
You know, we all need to continue this in a loving way, because I love these people who run these theaters. They're my friends. They've been my employers. I've had holidays at their houses, you know. No one wanted a fight, and I think that people think that standing up for what you believe in or standing up for your slice of the pie when no one's giving you any pie
has
going
to be
negatively
combative.
Affect your career, and I don't think that that's true.
Well, one,
I love that example, Nick, that it sets not only for other artists, but for our society in general. And I encourage our listeners to do their you know, to research this. This is a really, it's a wonderful example that you've set, not only for arts organizations, but for our society as well, of how to come together and acknowledge mutual accountability and work together to solve an issue.
Right. It was a win-win-win. Before we leave this subject, give everybody an idea what was really heartening, even from a perspective of someone that lives in Texas, which does not have the cost of living that New York has. What was the average pay and expenses and the expenses that go against somebody's weekly salary off Broadway prior to negotiations?
So about 68% of these contracts that we're talking about were $593 a week gross. So after you have to take out at least 10% for an agent, there's 2.25% union dues, and then there's taxes, which we all know about.
And yeah, but you also have a city tax, which is not here, a city and a state tax on top of a federal tax, which is not here.
So you're taking home around $380 a week. That's a pay cut in New York City from public assistance.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's less than unemployment. So I often had friends who would get offered a great job and say, I can't lose the $50 less a week that I'm going to lose if I get off unemployment. And when you have a system where your employees people can't take jobs because it's less than unemployment, you're in deep trouble.
That's a signal.
That's a signal that you're in really, really deep trouble. And what we called it fair wage on stage, so we didn't call it barest minimum living wage on stage. A, because that's really hard to chant. And B, because some of these institutions, like the public theater, have budgets of $41 million a year. And we don't think that we should get a subsistence wage at that theater. We think we should get a fair wage that represents our contribution to what goes into them being able to raise $41 million a year.
Right, and for me as a producer or director, it's not going to do me any good. I don't think it does me any good or serve the play well if my actors are either exhausted from working multiple jobs or unable to stick with the show because they've got to go move in with mom or live in Minneapolis.
And zoned out. Exactly.
Or dead. Exactly. Doesn't do me any good.
Yeah. No.
Nick, I know... I know that we have just a little bit more time with you, but I would love for our listeners to hear a bit about the future of Fair Wage on Stage. So the negotiations have reached, but I'd love for everyone to hear what the next steps are, because I know you guys aren't done just because you have come to an agreement in the off-Broadway world. What are the next steps for the Fair Wage on Stage movement?
Well, the Fair Wage on Stage movement is going to continue, and it's going to the next steps are going to be the next continuing to work with our awesome union, Actors Equity Association, and continuing to lobby them in the negotiations down the line that are coming up for the Lort Theaters, for better pay in the Lort Theaters around the country and better pay for the Lort Theaters in New York City. And we're also going to become an arts advocacy organization, because I think in the current political climate, the arts are going to be under a lot of stress over the next 4 years. And we're going to advocate to the National Endowment for the Arts, the New York State Endowment for the Arts, the New York City Endowment for the Arts, to continue to fund theaters, and especially to fund theaters as they make a good faith effort to raise the wages of their workers.
Excellent. Nick, tell folks what LORT means. What is a LORT theater?
Oh, that's the League of Regional Theaters.
Right. So here in town, the closest we have, it's not a LORT theater, is the Zach Theater.
I think that's an SPT contract.
Right, which is not a very good one. Houston no. has the Alley Theater, which is indeed a Lort A
house. Houston has, I think, the closest.
Yep. Well, Nick, I'm just giddy with the excitement that my best friend and someone who I care about and love so deeply is doing this kind of work. And I say, on behalf of the Austin arts community, my new community, thank you for the work that you and your colleagues have done and the inspiration that you're spreading to other communities. It's a really great example. I couldn't be prouder of you and of our community.
I'll second and third that. And we're going to take a little break right now. We want to come back and talk to you about some of the stuff you've done and what you're doing. Can you stick around?
I can't wait. Yeah, I can definitely stick around.
Good, but you must wait. Stick around. We'll be right back. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby Austin. I'm Lisa Sheps. I am joined by Nick Cubed.
Nick Cubed.
Okay, Nick Westray, you did not pick up the cue, so I'm going to have to do
that again.
Gosh,
I didn't know.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to have to do that again. So here we go. We'll just pretend that thing just ended, and we'll go, hey, you're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Cubed.
Nick Cubed.
Much better. And that is, of course, Nicole Shiro. Nick
the
Mayo.
The three amigos.
And Lisa.
With our best friend, Lisa.
So
you're the leader.
Nick, you have, what an incredible career. Although I had trouble finding. Oh, it sounds like, is there a street fight going on where you are?
Sorry, yes. I'm on this mean streets of New York City talking to you.
What street are you on?
I'm actually on 6th Avenue and 8th Street right now.
Ooh, girl, you're downtown.
I was like, yeah.
Yep. That's my old neighborhood.
I'm on the pavement.
Pounding the pavement.
Excellent. Well, we're glad you're there. But you've worked on Broadway, off Broadway. You've worked in film and television. What do you like doing the best? And be very careful how you answer, because there's a correct answer.
I like working off Broadway the best. It's my favorite thing to do in the world.
And I know you mean that.
I do. It's always what I've wanted to do. It's where most of my work has been. I think that off Broadway in New York just the most challenging, strange, fun, scary work in the world. And I am completely committed to continuing to live my life working off Broadway until they stop hiring me.
It is indeed. Nick Mayo, have you worked off Broadway?
I have not worked on an off-Broadway contract.
Nicole Shiro, have you worked off Broadway?
No, I have not.
So it's just you and me. I did Cloud 9 back in the day.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know you did. I love that. I've never heard you say that before,
we've talked
Lisa.
About it.
So, Nick, some of our listeners might know your work on the big screen as Meryl Streep's son in Ricky and the Flash, or currently in Washington Turn. So talk a little bit about what's going on Washington Turn. You're about to head off to Virginia and do some filming, right?
We're about to do the first season of Turn, and it's going to be great. We're going to finish out the war. It's a show on AMC. This is our fourth and final season. It's about the spy ring that George Washington had, and mainly of civilians, a few members of the Continental Army as well. But they were really civilian soldiers. It was the first CIA the country ever had, and they had a huge hand in winning the war for Washington.
And who do you play?
I play Robert Townsend, who was an actual spy. He was a Quaker.
And
he owned a small dry goods store in New York City, and no one knew he was involved in the spy ring until 1937. He was never found out.
Nick, what is your favorite thing about this character, the wig or the horse?
Well, how can you separate
the
two?
The wig, definitely.
The wig.
I didn't know if we were going to talk about your current project, so I'm excited we brought this up, because I have a question, and I think you guys are going to know what I'm going to ask. Nick?
Yes.
Because you're doing this, I'm sure you did like a little bit of research and history. Do you have a national park passport book?
Oh,
and have you visited the national parks in that area with all this rich history?
I just was in a national park in California. I was in Joshua Tree National Park. But I have not been to Shenandoah. I haven't been to the parks in Virginia, but I need to do that this season.
So Nicole has some homework for you.
It's the winter when we film, so it's a little cold.
Some of them are closed. Well, I love national parks, and I love how they relate to theater. These two think I'm nuts, but I'm going to give you a little homework. I'm going to get you your first national park passport, and I can't wait to hear about your adventures.
Oh, I can't wait to go. That's so generous of you. Thank you.
So thank
now
you.
The this show is, it's an HBO show, is it not? Am I right?
No,
it's on AMC.
AMC.
That brought you, you know, The Walking Dead and Mad Men.
And Hell on Wheels. That's how I, because I,
Hell on
it,
Wheels.
It followed Hell on Wheels for a long time, I think, when it first started.
Yeah,
I actually
absolutely.
Think it
that's
did.
A great show.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting. So the difference from being on stage versus in front of the camera, did you find that challenging at all? I mean, it's a different vibe.
Totally.
It's a very different vibe. I find both to be very challenging. I just think if it wasn't challenging, I would get bored and stop doing it. But it's not my show on screen. It's I don't I'm not in charge. I'm not in charge of what the audience gets. I don't know what the edit's going to be. I'm not in charge of the shot and all of that. Whereas on stage, it's me and my castmates and the audience the whole time, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a part, I'm not a control freak. I'm a control enthusiast. and so I really like being on stage because I like to be in complete control of it. But I also love filming.
Taking you back to your favorite, your off-Broadway community, share with our listeners some your top three off-Broadway theater companies.
You can't say that because Casa Valentina is one of the greatest shows and that's Broadway. You can let him put that
no,
in.
No,
she didn't listen to the question. She said theater companies.
Oh, sorry. I'm like,
oh, theater companies?
Yeah.
I'm like, don't take that show out of the mix.
My number one theater company off-Broadway in New York is definitely the New York Theater Workshop.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's where such shows as Rent started and Peter and the Star Catcher and Once. But they also have a great, great commitment to the avant-garde. I did a production of The Little Foxes there in 2010 that was directed by Ivo van Hove.
Of course.
Who
is what doesn't
great,
he direct?
Dutch theater director, yeah. And I love it there. I ran a series there for a long time called Process and Performance, where I interviewed avant-garde artists in New York. And they're just really great. It's a great home for artists. I just saw their fantastic Othello, starring Daniel Craig, the other night.
And who was his co-star?
David Oyelowo.
Okay, he did.
Yay!
They make fun of me because I can't pronounce
what
that
What are you
name.
Talking about? You
do
said
it really
it today.
Well.
You do
know,
it really well.
Well. Today. Okay, sorry, go on. Did you get to see that?
Amazing.
Did you see that performance?
I did. It's incredible.
I'm so jealous. You could not. Well, I was just
Seems
in
like
New York
everything.
Last week and they could not get tickets.
So we always try to...
No, it's very difficult. But the great thing about New York Theater Workshop is they have a company of artists called The Usual Suspects,
mm-hmm.
and which I'm one of. And if you're one of the artists that they support through this organization, you get a free ticket to every show they do.
Love that. Love
so
that.
So it's really great. So I love the New York Theater Workshop. I also really love the Barrow Street Theater, where I did Tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And I love... hold on, I only get one more, right?
One more. I think I know what it's going to be.
Do you? Oh, God.
They make chili.
What?
They have a chili cook-off once a year.
This company's amazing. They're called the Mad Ones. They're my favorite company in New York City.
But what's I don't the name of the company?
Because... They're called the Mad Ones.
The Mad Ones.
They're small. I would even say they're off Broadway.
Right. So
they're terrific. Check them out. They're really cool.
The interesting thing is, you know, I moved away from New York in 1994, and I lived there in the 1970s. And organizations like the New York Theater Workshop, they were a showcase production house at that point. And it's really
yeah,
cool to
absolutely.
See how, and Roundabout was big, but it wasn't as big as it is now. They certainly didn't have Broadway houses. But that's incredible.
Enormous.
Do you have anything coming up on stage?
I don't have anything coming up on stage that I can talk about, but I hope
that you can
very
talk
soon.
About.
I hope that when when we wrap the show in May, that I get to get back on stage as soon as possible, or else I'm going to become really bad at it.
Well, excellent. Well, you know what? We are plumb out of time. We are so happy that you came on the show. I wish we had more time to talk to you.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I'm so glad that this show is on in Austin, and I think your show is great, and I think that the community there sounds awesome.
And thanks again.
Thank
just
you.
To reiterate what Nick Mayo said, the work you did on Fair Wage on Stage is incredible. It was important work, and we're glad you're going to continue the fight.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That means a lot.
Okay. Thank you. That
Have
was
a great day, guys.
You
Happy
too.
Holidays.
See you. Be
Same
safe
to
on the
you.
Street.
Happy holidays.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That was Nick Westrate. He can. He doesn't have a website. Why doesn't he have a website?
I don't know. Don't tell him that. He'll get neurotic
he
about it.
Well, he'll listen to this.
He's going to hear it 30 seconds.
Anyway, we're going to just... what did I choose to play him off with? I don't remember. We're going to listen.
You chose a little ditty.
A little ditty. Here we go.
7.5 cents.
All right. We just have
That's
a few more minutes
favorite
to
pajama,
go.
Pajama game song. You're on fire today.
I'm on fire
behind
today.
There.
Exactly.
Spinning and serving out great music and theater news.
Lisa Shep. Nick Square.
She's our leader.
So this was a fun show. Today is, by the way, the first day of winter.
Yes, it is.
Burr.
As you
the
like
winter
to
solstice.
Say, the solstice.
It's the solstice.
it's the solstice. Here with Lisa.
Folks should go see La La Land. Just saying.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would have gone with you if you had asked.
I didn't want to go with anybody.
No,
I went by
myself. Text me while you were there. Hurt even more.
Well, there was only one seat in the theater.
Yeah.
So the good thing about going as a single. I did.
Pain inside.
It was pain inside. So very quickly, what are our plans for Christmas?
Well, I'm going to spend Christmas Eve with you kiddos. We're going to do the Feast of the Seven Fishes.
We're going to have some fitties.
Yes, we are. It's exciting.
Right. And Nick, do you and your husband have any kind of, do y'all have any traditions?
We don't.
Family traditions?
No, we don't.
Shenanigans.
We get into shenanigans. Oh, we always wear costumes on every holiday.
Oh, on every holiday.
Yeah, Thanksgiving.
So what will you wear on Christmas?
I was like, what are you wearing on Christmas Eve?
Santa hats, antler ears, fuzzy slippers. I might take it a step up and get a wig.
Go ahead, get yourself
a
wig.
You have some cool bells. My brother saw the bells and he wanted them.
I want one of those Santa dresses that they wear at the end of White Christmas.
Listen, I think that Santa may have left something under the menorah for you at the house.
No, I hope not.
Well, I'm just letting you know.
Bah humbug.
We're not just celebrating Christmas, we're celebrating Hanukkah
bah
too.
Bah humbug.
Just so you know.
Bah Hanukkah bug.
Bah Kamahara Hanukkah bug.
So, I've got to run. Remember, Austin Modern News comes on next if you're listening. And there won't be there won't be backstage today because we're having backstage now. I went away with, first of all, Stitcher, iTunes, offstageonair.com. I have to play a little bit of this. We're going to keep with it. You know, Hamilton, it's keeps
Go
going.
Go for it. It's
but
all right.
This is a cappella group called 613. It's called A Hamilton Hanukkah.
Nice.
So we'll be able to hear a little bit of it.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Happy
Hanukkah. Happy
Hanukkah.
How does a humble ragtag band full of boys from Yeshiva rise up to triumph against unbelievable odds in a battle our people still remember and celebrate?